great to be here again, and my heart is so full already. Now, we're here to continue our series in Acts, which has been phenomenal now, and we're up to chapter 9, which we'll read in a moment, but entitled Sent by Encounter. I could already get sidetracked and begin to just ponder the encounters of that Kingsway Care has given to so many. You know, the call, my heart's already full. That's what drew me to this church, you know, like the heart for community. And those that want need, as we just sung, the rescuing hand, an encounter with a loving God in a world that is lost and hurting in so many areas. But we won't. I'll stick to script. But I nearly didn't make it this morning because I had a encounter of my own. I don't know if you drove down the boulevard, but I got pulled over by the breathalyzer outside Endeavour there. And I had just gargled a mouthful of Listerine before I walked out the door. Yeah. Listerine. I needed some courage. And anyway, I breathed into the breathalyzer, wondering what was going to happen. And she looks at it and goes, could you do that again, sir? Anyway, I got here, so it's all right. But sent by encounter. You could just imagine the headlines, eh? Well before being sent, we were placed by God under a mandate to tend and to watch. God's mandates are spiritual markers for our encounter. But it's how we position ourselves in where we are placed that determines our encounter. Then from the encounter, how we respond. Sent, called, or led, our purpose is to be the image of God so that all may know. The premise of this is right at the beginning. It's set out in Genesis for us, where we are placed to tend and watch and encounter God daily in our walk through all that He has given us. Now, that could be another whole sermon, and I've written one on it, so I'll tether myself to this again, but to ponder what it is to encounter God daily through His enmeshment of us in His creation and as part of His image that we are to bear. And I was thinking, Dave, as you said, about the sunrise and how we can just see God in everything around us. And I'm going to read to you a moment a poem from Robert Frost, who was a deep believer in immersing himself in nature to find God and encounter Him on his daily walks. But last week I was, you know, staying back and I heard Foz, recounting a story to some of the guys about a time that Dave and I and he, with a friend, were milling some timber. A manual task, but good to be out there in nature and breathing in two-stroke and getting dirty together. But we suddenly cut a log and we paused and something made us ponder. And Foz goes, boys, this is a moment. And we stood and looked at this amazing piece of timber that nobody had seen for maybe 80 to 100 years. Except God. And it looked like His thumbprint in the grain, His DNA. And somehow we encountered the intertwined presence of God in His creation. And at that moment of us in our stunned, dumb silence, pondering what had just happened, our mate turns up, and we didn't say anything. Except Foz turns around and goes, "Steve, is that a tear in your eye?" He goes, "No, it's just, no, it couldn't be." And we pondered what it was. And I remember going home and speaking to Wendy, and she goes, "What else would you expect when you walk into the presence of God?" You know, and it was just an amazing time, unexpected encounter with God. Anyway, I'll read you a poem called An Encounter by Robert Frost. I don't know if you know him, but he actually died. I remember studying it at school, died on the very day I was born. And as I learnt about him, I feel like somehow something that drove him was embedded in myself. It reads, "When the heat slowly hazes and the sun by its own power seems to be undone, I was half boring through, half climbing through a swamp of cedar, choked with the oil of cedar and scurf of plants, and weary and overheated, and sorry I had ever left the road that I knew. I paused and rested on a sort of hook that had me by the coat, as good as seated. And since there was no other way to look, I looked upward toward heaven, and there against the blue stood over me a resurrected tree, a tree that had been down and raised again, a barkless scepter he had halted to, as if for fear of treading upon me. I saw the strange position of his hands up at his shoulders, dragging yellow strands of wire with something in it from men to men. 'You there,' I said, 'where are you nowadays? And what's the news you carry, if you know? And tell me, where are you off for?' 'Me? I'm not off anywhere at all. Sometimes I wander off beaten ways, half looking, half searching for the orchid Calypso.'" You might go, "What the hell?" But to be immersed in nature. Sorry that we have left a road that was comfortable and that we knew. Not knowing where to look, but looking to heaven. Seeing sometimes what we don't understand, but yet yearn for. And realizing that we often wander. Half looking, half searching, not knowing what we'll find. Robert Frost described himself in a letter to a friend, G.R. Eliot, as an orthodox Old Testament original Christian, but he claimed that his approach to the New Testament is rather through Jerusalem than through Rome or Canterbury of that day. In that, some may have called Frost a mystic, or even a heretic. But the faith of Robert Frost was nothing straightforward. He was not a simple Christian, but his faith was real. It was profound and pointed his readers in directions where they might find solace as well as understanding, where they would find their beliefs challenged, where they would find answers as well as questions. I find that the most healthy place to be. I don't remember, you would remember when Brett spoke about, you know, the concept of the grey, and you would have heard me mention it in the sermon before. But the willingness to walk in the unknown, in the search of daily revelation. It reminds me of a quote from Paul Young's book, The Shack. God says, "Those who love me come from every system that exists." "What, all roads lead to God?" Mac asked. God replies, "Most roads don't lead anywhere. What it means is that I will travel any road to find you and for you to encounter me. Saul was on such a road. In Acts 9:1-9, we read the account of a very scenario. Saul encounters Jesus. Meanwhile, Saul was uttering through, so we'll read. So I'm probably reading from the NLT. You can read along in whatever version or just listen. Meanwhile, Saul was uttering threats with every breath and was eager to kill the Lord's followers. So he went to the high priest. He requested letters addressed to the synagogues in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of any followers of the way that he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. As he was approaching Damascus on this mission, a light from heaven suddenly shone down around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. And the voice replied, "I am Jesus, the one you are persecuting. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The men with Saul stood speechless, for they heard the sound of someone's voice, but saw no one. Saul picked himself up off the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he was blind. So his companions led him by the hand. We'll read a little bit more of that later in Acts 26. But it's worth going to and reading, because Paul recounts his version of that story. I want to just reflect for a moment. How do we react to that story? And what, when we read about Saul, what are our first judgment of him? Now, it's easy to see him as ruthless, hard-hearted, and even evil in his action. But did Jesus appear to him just to stop the persecution, or because God knew his heart? Saul, later as Paul, still declared himself a Pharisee of Pharisees. He was a product of his upbringing, instilled in Jewish law and hierarchy of the religious society in which he was educated and born into. I believe, myself, that he was misguided in action and, yes, hard of heart, but fervent to protect the God of Israel that he knew. A zealot for what he perceived was the truth. He saw Christians and the teaching of those that followed Jesus as heresy. So pause a moment. I said before that many viewed the mystic observations of Robert Frost in his journeys through nature and his writings in poem as possible heresy. What is it to be a heretic? The dictionary definition is a belief or opinion contrary to orthodox religious doctrine, or an opinion at odds with what is generally accepted. Sometimes I know I'm a heretic. I would eagerly stand against many doctrines that I hear, but I would do it with the pursuit of a daily encounter with my God. Yes, they burned heretics at the stake in the old days, but they also nailed one to the cross. And he said, "Take up your cross and follow me." In Frost's own statement, he said, "My New Testament view is rather that of Jerusalem than that of Rome or Canterbury." Quite a controversial statement in 100 years ago. But his best friend was a rabbi, Rabbi Reichert. And he said, "I hear the voice of God in every poem that he writes." He was deeply spiritual. He listened to God. But back to Saul. God knew Saul's fervent heart, and that once he encountered the truth, that he would be unstoppable. The word encounter simply means to run into, but usually with the adverbial clause of unexpectedly. Running into Jesus is the best thing that could have happened to Saul. He needed such an encounter because only an encounter with God can transform us and give us purpose and direction like no other. Jesus, as Paul Young suggested, we read in John 4, takes another road, an unexpected road, a road that many may be considered to nowhere, where he meets in verses 4 to 42, the Samaritan woman. The Samaritan woman's life got radically transformed when she herself encountered Jesus. Further, God used her testimony to draw out many other people from Samaria. But they never really entrusted their lives until they had an encounter themselves. Finally, they said, as the village came out and saw for themselves the man the woman had declared to be the one, "Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man is the Savior of the world." You see, someone else's encounter cannot change you, but it should motivate you to want to encounter him too. Think about Saul. He saw the apostles performing miracles. He saw Stephen and all that he did, yet stood and witnessed his murder, as Dave shared with us the other week. Remember how I said it's how we position ourselves in where we're placed that actually dictates our response to encounter. And almost dumbfounding to us, but what he witnessed in those that he saw further hardened his heart. But when Saul had an encounter himself, his life was never the same. God spoke to him and said, "It's useless for you to fight against my will." We read these very words in Acts, where I suggested before. If you turn to Acts 26, and that's around verse 14, I think, where Paul recounts his own experience as he talks to King Agrippa. And I'll just read a small portion there. It goes, "One day I was on such a mission to Damascus, armed with the authority and the commission of the leading priests. But about noon, Your Majesty, I was on the road. A light from heaven that was brighter than the sun shone down on me and my companions, and we all fell down. And I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is useless for you to fight against my will.'" Interesting addition, isn't it? And just note that Paul himself says that, "I heard the voice in Aramaic." I had my own experience of being through it, you know, a multitude of things that I won't go into now, and I've suggested before, and some of my stories I know many of you may have heard before. But the decisions of my earlier life led me in to many encounters. Most of them ending up with broken or bleeding knuckles at many stages. Or drunk and not remembering what happened the day before. But at a certain time, I only realize now that, you know, well, not now, I have realized this before, that it was the promptings of God trying to change me. So I got to this point, I suddenly realized at one point I had no capacity for empathy or rational thinking. And it actually rocked me. that I knew I was deficient in some area, but I didn't know how. And through a series of circumstances, Wendy and I were escorting her mum to church for the company because of the loss of Wendy's dad. And through this period, somehow I got a sense of God, but ignored the nudges and the prompts. Remember how we position ourselves in what we hear and experience? Anyway, at this party, and it was just a normal party to us, it was a big party, and the father of the host was a Jewish gentleman. And I found myself in an amiable conversation with him. We were joking and laughing but talking about his heritage, and then I thought I could put in a few of the things I'd learnt escorting Wendy's mum to church in the conversation about God and the Jews, and it didn't go so good. But in the middle of that conversation, I was in the, I don't know how much of the 100 plus people, 150 people at that party was standing around listening. But all I began to hear was, "You, Dave? God? What do you know about God? Don't you remember this? What about this guy that you did this? What about when you did..." And I began to just hear people speak into my life about, "This is who you are. This is what you've done. This is how I see you. This is how you're known." And before, I don't know what happened, Wendy would probably remember better than I, but I was on the floor, crying, uncontrollably crying in front of all these people, because I heard what I was like or how people perceived me. And because of how I'd positioned myself, God just said, "You want to speak about me? Boom. You make a decision." And it was ruthless. And I reflect and feel like Saul, you know, like, "Oh my God, like, who do I think I am?" I don't know. It took me months and months and months to process. I still process it. It's probably a lifelong journey. But this is a place where many of us can find ourselves. God has been calling us for a long time now. He has been waiting to reveal himself in greater measure of intimacy. But we've been kicking against the nudges, against the knocks on the door have gone unheeded. He's waiting to encounter us. But we have been running in the wrong things, spending time in the wrong places. We may have been, we may have even developed very religious mindsets around our beliefs, or have just become too comfortable with the things of this world. And consider Samuel. Actually, why I considered this was because of Mia last week. And she's not here, she's on drastic camp. But she stood here and said, "This was the first time that I heard the audible voice of God." And I thought, oh my goodness, that is so rich. But young Samuel, we find him at the chapter 3, or we read of him early, but chapter 3 in 1 Samuel, I'll read you a small excerpt. "Now the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli, and the word of the Lord was rare in those days. There was no widespread revelation. And it came to pass at the time when Eli was lying down in his usual place," some versions say his comfortable place, "that his eyes had begun to grow dim and he could not see. Before the lamp of the Lord went out in the tabernacle, the Lord, where the ark of God was, this is where Samuel lay down. The Lord called Samuel, and he answered, 'Here I am.' And he ran to Eli, saying, 'Here I am, for you have called me.' Eli said, 'I did not call you. Go and lie down.' He went again, and the Lord called him, and yet Samuel. Samuel rose and went back to Eli, and he said, "Here I am, for you called me." He answered, "I did not call you, my son. Go back and lie down." Now we read, Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor the word of the Lord had yet been revealed to him. I'll come back to that. A third, the Lord called Samuel and said, he rose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for surely you did call me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord had called the boy. Saddest statements in that whole story is that Eli was older now. He'd been serving the Lord as a young man. He could have been 10 by now. It says, in that day, the word of the Lord was rare and widespread revelation even rarer. Oh my goodness. What were the leaders of the church doing? And at Samuel's age and his serving, and that he placed himself before the ark, that he did not yet know the Lord. It's dumbfounding that Eli could be the priest and Samuel could be in service and yet not know the word of the Lord. That's why I was so happy to hear Mia say that. And for us, as Dave described us, however you described us before, dirty, stinky adults or whatever it was, we have a responsibility as we encounter God to open the door and lead the people that God has entrusted to us. God wants you to experience Him personally, not just to know about Him, but to know Him. And going to church and reading the Bible is not necessarily knowing Him. But knowing Him means knowing His heartbeat. One of my dearest, dearest friends that I have been in, you know, surf ministry with for decades said to me not that long ago, "Dave, I have taught Jesus for years, but don't think I really knew Him." It's a profound statement. Profound statement. But that was right after an encounter that he had that made him realize this. You know, this is the difference between what the Hebrew Old Testament language calls yada and what we translate into the New Testament in the Gospels as gnosko in the Greek. The gnosko in the Greek is a word that is limited to intellectual understanding and knowing. But to know God in yada, to know God in yada is to walk in immersion in everything that our life holds, in every step through nature, in every word that we hold with somebody else, in every skill that we develop, is to experience God enmeshed in our immersement in Him. An example is the Israelites themselves, yet called to be God's witness, is that while seeing the daily miracles, especially in their wanderings, Moses was the one experiencing the encounters. In Psalm 103, verse 7, it says, "He made known His ways, yada, to Moses, to the people, His deeds." While there were many in the New Testament who received the miracles from Jesus, only those who truly encountered Him became God chasers. May you and I be counted as the latter, that we would chase him because his pursuit of us is relentless. Now, I'm not one for formulas, but just as the mandates of God set down spiritual markers for our encounter, as I started with, to tend and to watch. Another one of those, if you're wondering about what his mandates are, is Sabbath. They are spiritual markers for our encounterment of God. As are these mandates, so do I believe the very purposeful words of Jesus and his use of them are spiritual markers for encounterment. You know, and I don't want you to hear me wrong, but and I'm not one for just using words, but there's a power in our understanding and our engagement and our encounter. And God showed me once a principle that I call the F.F. Arthur principle, a door to encounter. I engraved that word on a sword that I gave my dear son Aaron for his 21st, because it means heaven be opened. In Mark 7 is where we find the word. It's an Aramaic word. And hence I said, ponder that Jesus spoke to Paul in Aramaic on the road. Mark 7:32 to 34 says, then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech. And they begged him to put his hand on him. He took him aside from the multitude. He put his fingers in his ears and he spat and touched his tongue. Then looking to heaven, he sighed. And I don't see that as a sigh. Oh my God, sigh. It's like a breathe God in and breathe him out. He sighed and said to the man, Ephphatha, that is heaven be opened. And the man could hear and speak plainly. Now, this is one of the few personal miracles. So, in the principle within that I'm saying, now it's not a magic formula, but whatever we need to withdraw from, he takes the man and withdraws him away from the multitude. He takes him away from the crowd. The only time that we intentionally share saliva on your tongue without being too gross is in a place of intimacy. So he called him away. Remove yourself from the distraction. Create a place of intimacy with God, which means trust. It means honesty. It means being vulnerable. And then call down heaven, Ephphatha, over whatever it is that you want God to meet you on, we're in. My initial encounter that I spoke about before with God broke me, but it taught me to yada him in such a way to hunger to experience him in all things, so much that a critical decision point in my life, I yearned to know the heartbeat, or that my heart was beating to God's same rhythm. I needed to know that my work within the surf culture, that my love for my family, that my walk in my community, that my job with TAFE was holistic and part of God's purpose for me. There was other decisions attached to that I had to make. And so because I had learnt to yada him, I knew that he could meet me wherever I chose. But I chose a place where I had made some of the worst decisions in my life, and where that brokenness came out of. So I went to a hotel that I had frequented since I was 17 years old. I bought a beer and I sat in the corner. I didn't know what I expected, but I expected an answer. And I didn't get too much into it, the beer that is, before the front doors opened. And I had positioned myself, not hiding in the corner. I positioned myself to look. And in the door opened, and a guy, had no idea who he was, but I knew he was going to come and speak to me, because he looks up and he just walks straight towards me. And he goes, "Dude, I see you everywhere. I've always wanted to come and speak to you." You know, like, and he just went, recounted times he'd seen me and observed me doing something or doing this and wanted to come and speak to me, and then felt, nah, I don't know why. Maybe I'd punched him when he was young, I don't know. But anyway, he just went away. And it's like, oh my goodness, that was a little bit random. But anyway, as we'd spoken, I'd got most of the way through the beer, so I went and got another one, as Dave has taught me. So I, as I get to the bar, I bump into another guy, sorry, and he looks at me and he goes, "Oh," he goes, "I know you. You are my TAFE teacher. Oh, man, you were the best," like this, and he starts recounting all this stuff, and no, I'm not talking myself up, but he's just so happy to see me and talk and say how I'd helped him and what he was doing now, and go, "Oh, sweet," you know, and so I'd grab the beer, and then he comes back and he goes, "Oh, but if you want, some of the other boys, I'd like you to meet them. They're out in the beer garden. We're celebrating something. I don't remember what." So I thought, oh, I'll go out. They had been celebrating pretty well. When I got out there, another guy, I'd never seen him before, stands up on a table in the middle of the beer garden and goes, "I love this guy." And I mean, this gets pretty random. When somebody's drunk, standing on a table in the middle of the pub saying they love you, I was having second thoughts. But it was just so random that it could not be on purpose. So I joined in for a little while, finished that beer. I'd ridden my bike across there. I went out and thought, oh, I'll just go home. I got into the dark of the park. And like Mia, I heard God say 3 times, "Did you hear me? Did you hear me? Did you hear me? I see you, the first man. I know you, the second man. I love you, the guy standing on the table." I was broken again, but in a good way this time, because I knew God knew my heart. When we know God, we should expect to encounter him everywhere. From those encounters, we should stand for, with, and in him, that those around us yearn to encounter him as eagerly as we will share him. God bless you. Thank you.